Good morning. Hi, Jasna. A common definition of vocal registers are perceptually distinct regions of vocal quality that can be maintained over some ranges of pitch and loudness. It's the common definition. So, and in what I'm about to do, how many different voice qualities do you hear? How would you describe them? And what labels would you use to talk about them? Dehydration from the plane just a few days ago. So we'll see what happens when my voice does this. What do you think? Registers. Yeah, that's a great aria. How many voice qualities did you hear? Differences? None? One? Anybody want to guess for other more than one? Every note? Want to hear it again? Okay, definition of these registers, perceptually distinct regions of vocal quality that are maintained over some pitch range or a range of volume and so forth. So, how many do you hear? Let me start that one over. Any changes of voice quality? Okay. Would that indicate that maybe there's more than one register? If you hear two different voice qualities according to this definition. Well, let's go on to the next one. I'm told that there's been some controversy about registers here. Surprising. How many different voice qualities did you hear? More than one! All right! Agreement! How many hold up fingers? I see a three, I see a two, I see a other threes and twos. Threes and twos. Getting threes and twos. Okay. How about this one? One. Okay.
It all
depends
on how you define it.
Well, I gave a definition here. Perceptually distinct regions of vocal quality that can be maintained over some range of pitches and loudness. So in this last one, you're now saying two.
Yeah, perceptual,
right?
Different sound.
Right?
But I think your source would be about the same, or the actual loud
voice
will increase the
volume
higher from.
Okay. Very interesting. This is just about highlighting the reality that registers. What are them dang things? Let's try this one. Wait a minute. Didn't go too bad on that one, actually. I was worried about that one. Okay, what did you hear? Qualities? Three, two, raise fingers, one quality. Five qualities. Three, two, okay. Final one. No. Next to last one, sorry. dehydrated, swollen vocal folds from a cold that I had in Australia. So, flippily flops and all sorts of things like that. But that illustrates the reality that when registers are being attempted, such things as that can make a difference in what actually comes out. Let's skip that one because it didn't come out too good. Okay, so here's this one. Oh boy. Forget the last one. Yeah. Exactly. Amen, brother. And that's what I intended from the beginning. You can't make me sing that song. Those notes are past my break, and I'd have to use that weak part of my voice that just sounds awful. I won't do it. I've always been a soprano, so my lower pitch range is pretty weak. In fact, I was taught that singing in chest register can damage your voice. I certainly don't want to do that. I've always been an alto, and when I sing pitches in the middle of the treble staff, my voice has a kind of edgy, hard sound that sticks out in the choir. Then, above that, my voice is all breathy and weak. I've always wanted to be able to sing with a high, clear soprano voice, but I can't. A male, I can sing fine up to about a D, and from G on up is sort of okay, but right in between, my voice is real inconsistent. Sometimes it just gets weak or goes out of tune, and sometimes it just slips or cracks. Can you help me? Female, I had one singing teacher who called my head voice falsetto. Does that mean I'm supposed to sound like a man when he sings in his falsetto? What is my chest voice and my head voice? I mean, and somebody told me there's supposed to be a middle voice in between them. I'm really confused. Can you explain about my voices and show me when I'm supposed to be in one or the other? My choir director says there are two voices, chest voice and head voice. But my singing teacher talks about chest, middle, and falsetto registers. I read a book on voice that said there was a heavy mechanism and a light mechanism, whatever those are. I wish you guys would make up your minds. This is frustrating. The medical profession has a relatively standardized, agreed-upon vocabulary. Medical students are trained in it. Physicians from different English-speaking countries commonly understand each other using it. The voice education profession doesn't have that. Chest. Does that mean to the novice that we got to do something inside here to get a chest voice to come out? Head voice. Does that mean we got to do something in the head in order to get something to come out that is supposed to sound like something? Middle register, okay? Chest, middle, head, neck, yeah, foot. What's that? Falsetto register, I mean, everybody in the English-speaking world knows what that means. It means guys making a female-like quality. That's falsetto. But there are people who say that everything above chest, everything, anything that you do above chest is falsetto. Unless it's whistle. And then there are them lower and upper passaggios. You know, the point of all of this is to highlight the reality that, in my opinion at least, we have a huge credibility problem with the public. Huge. Not just because we don't have a relatively unified vocabulary or conceptual base, as in the medical profession and so on and so forth, but for other reasons as well. We have biases about which styles are good and which styles are bad and which ones we're going to teach and which ones we're not going to teach and all kinds of things like that. If I hear one more time someone coming to me and or calling me on the phone and asking me, are you going to make me sing Italian art songs? You get what I'm drifting about here? We're in the midst of a decades-long transition from what I refer to anyway as pre-scientific vocal pedagogy to what I again refer to as science-based voice education. In the meantime, as a profession, we have this credibility problem. Student or a person who wants to learn how to sing whatever music they want to sing, that to express themselves, comes to a singing teacher and they study for X amount of time. For whatever reason, they go to another singing teacher and study for X amount of time, another singing teacher study for X amount of time, three very different perspectives about voice, three different explanations of what happens, how to breathe, what registers are, what the names are, how many of them there are, and all of those wonderful things. And I'm not telling anybody anything new in this crowd, but I do want to raise it as an issue because this collection of concepts, terminologies, and practices that we have, it's about time that maybe, in my opinion at least, in our opinion, those of us who collaborated on this paper, that it's time that we begin to seriously take a look at this issue in terms of credibility of our profession and the general public. Why do we not have people knocking down our doors to learn how to sing? Because if you think about it, there's an awful lot of people who sing. Chorus America estimated something like 32 million U.S. citizens sing in a choir. Amazing. Or was it 28 million? One of those. Our paper proposes a science-based theory of vocal registers. That maybe it will open the discussion up, and maybe it won't. It's an early attempt on our part to look at the available science that at least we are aware of as human beings on this earth and attempt to articulate a reconciliation of the various conflicting concepts, terminologies, and practices related to vocal registers. So a little bit of context. The brain runs the larynx. The brain runs everything, all of the parts of us that we refer to as, or that coordinate together to produce the phenomenon we refer to as voice. Neural networks, highly complex neural networks, are involved in order to change vocal behavior, to add, subtract, alter, whatever. Neural networks have to be altered by experience. More often than not, we tend to think of stuff that happens here or here or here without regard to the fact that it is here that tells all these guys what to do and when to do it and how intensely and that kind of thing. That is a setup to say that the neuromuscular capabilities of, just to isolate one part of the interactive part of us called voice, that the larynx is incredibly capable of doing an amazing array of coordinations that are incredibly subtle and tiny, as well as big and obvious things, and all of the things in between, so that there are gross motor skills, one expression for it. Ah! I got to sing loud, therefore I'm going to make that sound. I'm going to sing soft. Ah! Vocal novices tend to gravitate to those two ends because those are gross motor skills. Anybody can do them. It's what lies in between that requires a variety of increasingly subtle neuromuscular coordinations. A lot of this stuff is documented in the paper. There's 75 copies of it that started being passed out. That's all I could afford to print. But you'll get a copy of it in the mail, not too distant future, I understand. So first of all, let's acknowledge that all human beings that coordinate together to produce all the parts of human beings that coordinate together to produce the phenomenon called voice are truly interactive. There's no question about that. Change one aspect and the others have to adapt to it. And there are many influences on the production and variation of voice qualities. No question about all of that. We believe, however, that human beings have the capability to orally distinguish which areas of the vocal mechanism contribute to various categorical components of voice quality. For example, the categorical components that are contributed by various coordinations of the larynx and various voice quality components that are contributed by the vocal tract. Can we tell the difference between what the larynx has contributed in a radiated spectrum, our perception of that radiated spectrum, and what the vocal tract has contributed? And would that make a difference in how we do what we do, whatever that is? We believe that that is possible, at least up to a point. Again, acknowledging the truly interactive nature of voice. We propose that the voice quality components that we refer to as vocal registers are produced primarily, not exclusively, but primarily, by laryngeal functions. Any acoustic influences on laryngeal function are just that. The acoustic realities alter larynx functions, which then alter the change of quality at the source, at the voice source, at the level of the larynx. And that can make a difference in what people can hear and detect and so forth. So, specifically, we propose that the voice quality components that relate to voice registers are brought about by various configurations of the vocal folds that are primarily influenced by the thyroarytenoid and cricothyroid muscles. For comfortable terminology for everyday people, we have adopted the expression the shortener muscles and the lengthener muscles, referring to their primary functions, not their exclusive functions, but their primary functions. And there are also in the larynx the closer and opener muscles. They contribute various voice quality components as well, but not related to registers. This information is presented in the paper, not enough time to deal with it in the amount of time allotted here. This is a huge topic, huge, obviously. So, we are suggesting alternative labels for the vocal registers so that you understand my vocabulary. I'm going to share two of them with you here at the beginning. We did have criteria for selection of these terms. Three criteria. These terms need to convey direct referential correlation with at least one universal, measurable, and perceivable parameter of vocal acoustics. They must be relatable to vocal anatomy and function as defined within the anatomical, physiological, and voice sciences, and be easy to assimilate into the colloquial English of people who are not familiar with current technical jargon of the voice professions. Those are our criteria. So the two most common ones, the terms that we are suggesting for our consideration, are lower register and upper register. Lower is the rough equivalent of chest register, upper or head register. There are five in all. Read the paper. Today there's only time to maybe address two of them. In these two registers, both the shortener muscles and the lengthener muscles are co-contracted. When people are singing in the lower part of their capable pitch range, the shortener muscles are more prominently contracted than the lengthener ones. So the two have to contract, co-contract, in order to stabilize the length of the vocal folds so we can sustain pitch. Okay. So when we're in lower register, the vocal folds are shorter, thicker, and more lax, as we all know. And lower fundamental frequencies come out, et cetera, et cetera. So on the screen here, there is a representation on the right side of that lower register one there at the top that gives you some indication that in lower register, in lower pitch range, same thing, the vocal folds are thicker and the top to bottom contact area between the two vocal folds is taller. And because they are lax, there is a greater tissue depth or depth of tissue that is involved in the ripple waving process. We believe that that setup, that arrangement, configuration of the vocal folds puts more energy into a number of partials, but particularly into the fundamental frequency in the first few overtones, such that when people are singing, there is a slightly, there is a perception of a bit more thickness in the quality of the sound and full-bodiedness. Thickness, full-bodiedness in the quality of the sound, generated by that configuration. So if a person is in lower register, lower pitch range, and those realities are happening, and they are wishing to ascend in their pitch range to go to higher and higher pitches, obviously the lengthener muscles are going to have to increase the intensity of their contracting in subtle ways in order to lengthen the vocal folds. And if the person is a relative vocal novice and the shortener prominent coordination of lower register is where they've done all their talking and most of their singing, the brain is probably going to keep the shorteners in there, and at some point they will reach an impasse in the tension that's on them where the person will say, I can't sing any higher than that, or there will be a massive, well, for them anyway, a massive adjustment between the two muscles so that there is an abrupt change in the quality of the sound, and that is identified as a register break in the quality of the sound. However, someone with more refined skills may be able to start in the same pitch area and a rise in pitch, and will be the brain will have a set of neural networks that will enable it to send signals down here such that the shortener muscles will gradually, in a complementary way, give an intensity of contraction while the lengtheners take. That then will begin to change the relative thickness of the vocal folds, the top-to-bottom contact area, the relative depth of tissue that's involved, and it will change the amount of energy that's put into the fundamental frequency in the first few overtones, so that listeners will hear a gradual lightening of the voice quality, even though it is remaining within the thicker, more full-bodied general quality of sound. Then at some point, there's going to have to be, as the person continues to rise in pitch, there's going to have to be a transition from shortener prominent to lengthener prominent. And another piece of all of this is vibrational mode. And as I understand it, there are two basic vibrational modes that are of great importance in voice. One vibrational mode is the one that we are all relatively familiar with, where the vocal folds separate at the bottom. And now we're talking about lower register, shortener prominent coordination. They separate at the bottom and then open towards the top, and while the top is finishing its opening, the bottom is coming back together again, And so you have that kind of waving motion bottom to top over the surface of the tissues. The other one is a motion that goes medial to lateral to medial to lateral to medial to lateral, back and forth, etc. And in lower register, those are both present and happening. As, however, the vocal folds get longer and longer and longer and are gradually thinning out, even within the shortened or prominent coordination, there's going to be, again, less energy put into the fundamental frequency in the first few overtones, and the vibrational mode will begin to shift in such a way that this one is getting gradually less and less. The top-to-bottom contact area is going to be gradually, very subtly, less and less. Therefore, less and less energy in the fundamental frequency in the first few overtones. Eventually, there is going to be a transition from a prominence or an equalization of the two vibrational modes to the point where this vibrational mode is much more frequently, much more thoroughgoingly present than this one is. And we propose that that would represent a transition from shortened or prominent to lengthened or prominent coordinations in the larynx that will bring with it a voice qualities that can be in general described as lighter and thinner when compared to the voice qualities of lower register. So when they're both the shorteners and lengtheners are contracted, but the lengtheners are more prominently contracted than the shorteners, then you have that lighter, thinner voice quality that goes up. So when I was going, hey, hey, there's a slightly lighter, thinner quality at the top, thicker, more full-bodied at the bottom. Does that mean that I'm about getting close? Okay. There is not enough time to address the interaction with acoustics as a part of this theory of vocal registers, other than that there is, of course, that's when the lengtheners, or shorteners rather, are faded out completely. And it's only the lengtheners that are now changing the pitch. Again, the details are in the paper and so forth. One final thing, I guess, to say about that is that we propose that the passaggio realities are effects, resonance effects on the larynx that produce reactive or involuntary adjustments of the larynx that are consistent with the kinds of things that I have been attempting to describe here. Oh, God, that's a convoluted sentence. But this is such a hugely complicated issue. That's why the DingNab paper is some 50-some-odd pages long. And it's presented for anyone to critique, for any of the scientists to say, well, you really washed out on this one, this point, because here's the evidence for that. If that happens, it means that the authors of this paper learned something, and that's what human beings do and enjoy. Just for the fun of it, final thing, some register games. This is a game called I Make a Sound, You Make a Sound. So whatever I do with my voice, you just send it back in a similar way, similar pitch. You know, it's not direct imitation, not to sound like me, but the kind of thing I do with my voice, you just send it back. So if I go, who are you?
Who are you?
Who are you?
Who are you?
Pretend that you're walking down a street about a block in front of you. You see a group of friends of yours. They're walking in the same direction as you, so their backs to you. They don't see you. You want to get their attention, so they'll stop you, catch up. You walk together, and Suppose that you use your voice to get their attention, common thing, and you make a sound that hardly anyone uses for this purpose anymore, but for the sake of this bit, let's pretend that you go, here it is for females, wait a second, yoo-hoo, here it is for males, yoo-hoo, yoo-hoo, do that, here we go, and yoo-hoo, yoo-hoo. How can you start in the yoo-hoo part of your voice, wink, wink, and slide down and join the who are you part of your voice like this sample. Yoo-hoo are you. For females, yoo-hoo are the same thing. Here we go. Yoo-hoo are you. And the reverse of that would be, who are you? Here we go. Who are you? Do you guys sense any gear shifts on the way up and down? Any transitions going on between those two things? Register transitions and all those wonderful things. That's also in the paper and all that stuff. So, I'm going to end at this point.